I invite Bill Fry to come and share our scripture.
The scripture is from the Matthew, second chapter, verses 1 through 16. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all of Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. Now, after they had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and there remain until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated. And he sent and killed all the children in around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men.
I love Epiphany Sunday, probably mostly because for about the last 20 years, in one form or another, I have marched with children bringing gifts. And as much as I love the carol, which I do, "We Three Kings," we do have to admit they weren't kings. And we have no idea if there were 3 or 5 or 10, or even for sure whether they were men or women. We need to know that they must have been wealthy to bring such expensive gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. Matthew calls them the Greek word magi, which we translate as wise men. They were wisdom seekers, mystics, and stargazing astrologers. Legends have amplified the story, saying that they were from Europe, Asia, and Africa. And that legend does capture an essential point that Matthew was trying to make. This baby born in Bethlehem was not just for the Jews. He was for all peoples of the earth, people of every race and culture, every land and language. With the story of the Magi, Matthew's gospel makes a global claim right from the beginning. Jesus brings good news for everybody, all people. So they weren't kings. They were magi, and commentators agree that probably, most likely, they were Zoroastrian priests from Persia, men who studied holy scriptures, who studied various forms of spirituality and mysticism, and men who studied astrology, the ways of the stars. And they saw a sign in the sky, a star at its rising, they said, and they came seeking a child born king of the Jews. They recognized the sign, understood its significance, that a new king was being born in Israel, the long-awaited Messiah, and they wanted to worship him. Based simply on a star and the quickening of their hearts and spirits, they set out on a long, difficult journey, about 1,200 miles from Persia to Jerusalem, probably traveling along the ancient Silk Road, over mountains and deserts, through strange and dangerous lands. For months, possibly as much as 2 years, they traveled on faith, driven by their mystical vision and their great hope. They are archetypes of faithful pilgrims, mystics on the journey toward God. But for all their wisdom and spirituality, there was a lot they did not understand. They did not understand the politics. They did not seem to grasp the dangers. Israel was under occupation from the Roman Empire, and Israel had as their king Herod, who was a man who did not have a true claim to David's throne and ruled as the Roman emperor's proxy. The wise men assumed the new king would be born in the palace. They couldn't imagine anything else. Then they assumed the king and his advisors would know how to show them the new king. So they went straight to Jerusalem, straight to Herod's palace, and asked openly, "Where is the new king who has been born?" And Herod was frightened, and all of Jerusalem with him. Now, I've always assumed that Herod was frightened because of the threat to himself, the threat to his power and control, and I'm sure that was true. But I learned something more this week that adds some different light to the story. You probably, like me, don't know a lot of Middle Eastern history. We don't get much of it in school. But it hit me this week, and so I did a little research for the history of the Roman Empire and Persia. And I learned that those two focal points of power were bitter enemies for over 600 years, probably the longest conflict in human history. First as the Parthian Empire and later as the Sassanid Empire, Persia was Rome's major rival for dominance in the Middle East. Persia, as we know, is modern-day Iran. And Israel, like so many smaller countries of the region, Lebanon, Syria, modern-day Iraq, and Turkey, Armenia, Israel was caught in the middle, pulled and tugged between them. And so, if Herod was seen to be making friends with wealthy Persians, what might that mean to Rome? These Persian magi showing up at Herod's palace, wanting to worship a new king, didn't just threaten Herod's control, I think. I think they threatened to bring the crushing power of Rome down on Jerusalem and all of Israel. Herod consulted with his scribes and sent them to Bethlehem. But he was careful to make them promise to let him know where they found the child, saying he wanted to go worship him too, when of course he had other plans. And as they left Jerusalem, the star they had seen so many months before appeared again, and they were overwhelmed with joy because their vision had been made real and their hope burst forth into light, and the star led them straight to the child. They found Jesus and Mary and worshiped and gave their gifts. All their months of journeying had led to fulfillment, but not where they expected and not how they had imagined. Not in the palace, not in Jerusalem with royalty and priest, but in a small home in Bethlehem. The Messiah was found among peasants, among the poor and simple people. The Messiah was born without privilege or power. And then the Magi warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, went home by another way, refusing to tip Herod off. And Joseph also had a dream that warned him, and he woke up and fled with Mary and Jesus to Egypt. Jesus began his life as a refugee, an asylum seeker. And Herod, when the Magi did not return, realized that he had been tricked. And in fury, he ordered all the babies of Bethlehem to be slaughtered. The slaughter of the innocents, we call it. Senseless murders. So brutality and violence overshadow this story. And what do we do with it? What do we do with this story on this Epiphany Sunday at the beginning of this new year, 2020? More than one person in the last couple weeks has said to me, this coming year feels momentous. There is much at stake with our politics, with our society and other societies across the world, with our climate. And now this week we see escalating conflict with Iran, America, the 21st century Western Empire, threatening war with modern-day Persia, using drones to strike from the sky on the lands in between again. And always, always it is the children and the innocent who suffer the most, caught in the violence of human history. It can feel so overwhelming just to hear the news, can't it? It is heartbreaking and it weighs us down with worry and even with despair. And yet, this last Sunday in the New York Times, Nicholas Kristof wrote a column called The Best Year Ever. For all that is wrong with the world, he wrote, which he writes about all the time, 2019 was probably the year in human history when children were least likely to die, adults were least likely to be illiterate, and people were least likely to suffer excruciating and disfiguring disease. In 1950, 47% of children in the world died by age 15. Now it is less than 4%. That's huge. Just 40 years ago, 42% of the Earth's people lived in what we call extreme poverty, less than $2 a day. Now that's down to less than 4%, less than 10%. And he says every day, every single day of the last decade, another 170,000 people moved out of extreme poverty. Yes, they're still poor, but they have more than their parents did. For most of human history, he writes, most people in the world have been illiterate and lived in extreme poverty, but today that is no longer true. Kristof quotes one expert saying that we are some of the first people in history who have actually found ways to make progress against these problems. We have changed the world in our lifetimes. How awesome is it, this man says, to be alive at a time like this. He goes on to say three things are true. The world is much better, the world is still awful, and the world can be much better still. Kristof challenges us to see the world from the perspective of the world's poor and to take heart from their improved lives. And he encourages us to draw hope from the passion that so many people, especially young people, are showing to make the world a better place. And so he shows us that this year there is revelation and inspiration to be found in our world. So on this Sunday, at the beginning of this momentous year, we hold the paradoxical truths. Good and evil, hope and fear. And for me, this story always captures all of that. And we choose again this new year, the journey we will live the path we will follow. In the book Meditations on the Tarot, author Tom Berg writes that in the Christmas season every year, we experience again the birth of the child, there is an evocation of spiritual and psychic forces, an awakening, an activation of forces, including individuals capable of receiving his revelation. There is power that stirs in our lives and in our world this time of year. But, he says, those who follow the star must learn the lesson once and for all. Don't consult Herod and the chief priest and the scribes of the people. To follow the star without seeking for external indications and confirmation on the part of Herod and the powers of this world. Herod, he said, represents the anti-revelatory force and principle, the forces that are driven to kill, to strangle, and push back on all the tender flowers of spirituality. So the wise men's story is for us both inspiration and warning. We're called to follow the star, to follow those wise men on their journey toward God and toward each other, and to learn the lesson they had to learn on the way, that God's power is not to be found in the palaces of kings or the courts of the world. We must not look to them for the answers we need. We're called to follow the star, to Bethlehem with the wise men, where we find revelation, awakening, the truth of a God who is shown to us in our dreams and our visions, the God of our heartfelt passions to make the world a better place. In Bethlehem, we find the God who is always among the poor, the least of these, the children. We follow the wise men to Bethlehem, but as Frederick Buechner has written, Bethlehem is not the end of the journey, but only the beginning. Not home, but the place through which we must pass if ever we are to reach home at last. So we follow the wise men to find our way home by another way, God's way, the way of love, the way of self-giving, the way of service, the way of dying and being born again. And that way brings us always to this place, to this table, the table of Christ's body broken and blood poured out, the table of new life found in communion with God and with each other. This is a place of hope. This is a place of awakening. This is a place of faith, of goodness in the midst of all that troubles us in our world. We are invited to come to the table.